Agnes Sassoon, Reel 4. Agnes, you were telling me that you'd now were just about to leave this sample camp where you'd stayed overnight and seen the dentist and had a tooth removed and been beaten.
Not beaten, but pushed with the guns all the way there and back. And I was relieved, despite still my tooth was aching, but I knew that it's out, and, you know, it made me more comfort. And when I got back in the barracks, nobody wanted to believe it, that I am back. And, I prayed, and I really prayed, and I prayed to Mighty. I really didn't know what I wanted. I wanted to see my parents with me, to find them somewhere on the route, like other people find their relatives sometimes, or not to find them. I didn't know what is better for me, if they would survive if I don't meet them, or they will survive with me if I meet them. So, you know, I really did not know what to pray for. And whenever new groups were coming in any camps, I was watching out for my parents, and I prayed that I should see them, and another minute I prayed that I shouldn't see them, because maybe that's bad, you know? So didn't know, really didn't know what's happening. Then we started to walk, and we slept in pigsties, in farms, and that was the time when it happens with this grain, which I don't want to go back with the story, that the woman went to the soldier to say that I picked some grains and put it in my mouth, and it was a terrible thing. And then we slept once in another pigsty with the pigs warming us, because it was very cold. And then we slept, we ate the roots from under the snow and under the snowy path, because I don't know whether it was so wintry, but in those Bavarian and wherever we went, I don't know where we went. We went the whole Germany, even we went to Sudeten-Deutschland summer on all our ways back and forwards. I don't know, because they themselves were in run. They themselves didn't have anything to eat, bread or something. So we got even less. So we couldn't carry the last time what we got. And then suddenly, when I couldn't walk anymore, I really gave up. I didn't give so up that I had rags on my feet and holding me and everything. And the soldier saw, and he told me, please do go there and have a rest, and then you join the group. And then when he shot me, and he thought he shot me in my heart, and after a while, I don't know how long I was there, I heard voices, and someone came, and they were Germans with French prisoners of war. And they heard the noise that I said, you know, I did not know. I was just coming unconscious. And I thought I'm in the other world. I thought I'm in the heaven. You know, I thought I'm dead.
Where had you been shot? Whereabouts in your body?
That was in my leg. He didn't want to shoot me in the leg. Even though you can't make it good plastic surgery with it, because it was this figure, because it was, you see, here gone in, it was a bullet, a German bullet, and they took it out, an ordinary doctor, after I will tell you the story. So anyway, this leg, I did feel first when they shot me, I didn't feel anything, then I felt a heaviness, and then I probably conked out. I don't know whether I was out days or hours or what, you know. I just was in a great hot heat, fever I had, and it was in the snow, lying between all like Christmas trees or what, you know.
So you were all marching along?
Yes.
How many was there of you?
Well, I don't know, there were rows and rows. If I would tell you, I would lie. Hundreds maybe, or I don't know, they're all marching, because the soldiers, they didn't know where to go. They directed them all sorts of
and
places.
And you felt you couldn't go any further?
And they saw me that I'm out of the way, and they told me to go to rest. And I didn't believe. I didn't know what to believe. But I went up to there, and he just came there quietly and shot me. And he left. He didn't even bother to look.
Did you see him shoot you? Did you?
Yeah, I did. I saw the gun against me. And that minute I said, finish. No. What can I do? I thought, finish. I didn't feel anything else. And then I felt a great heat, and I thought I'm in the other world. I mean it. You know, it's true. That feeling is even now in me. And then I started to open my eyes. I saw people. First of all, I saw civilian ragged people, then with soldier hats, then I saw German soldiers, and they argued. And again, they spoke French. I know a bit French, yeah? And the German argued. He said, nine, this Yudin, they will go, that I am a Jew, and I will go in other places. And they were soldiers, they were, I think, prisoners of war. They were also evacuating them from the camps, probably, as I found out later, my luck. And they insisted that they should take me with them. And they had a little Red Cross carriage. And they put me there, and I was in terrific pain after. I didn't feel my leg. And I said, no, I'm finished. I thought I'm dead first. And then when I saw these people, they took me there. There was a doctor, a Hungarian doctor, with these French prisoners. And he came from a Hungarian town. And he had just a hand knife. And he took the bullet out with a hand knife. And they cut off some trees and put the trees and made my leg.
Made a splint.
A splint, because it was terrible. You see how ugly it is after so many years. And it my father didn't let it to have an operation because they would have to break it, to cut it, and I might not be able to walk proper. Like this is not shorter, you know, and I can walk on it properly, so it will be ugly, and that's it. But if they make a plastic surgery, it's not enough, they cover the skin because it's crooked. Yeah?
So you're left with a fairly big
but
skull.
But anyway, I had a lot of great pain and temperature, and they didn't have no medicine, nothing. They did what they could. It was a bit of alcohol and all. The Germans argued they didn't want to take me, and the French, they were probably holding something about the prisoners of war. There was a high-ranking officer, a French, and he insisted that they should take me.
What did you look like at this stage, physically?
Well, I was just one of those corpses of Bergen-Belsen. I mean, by then I was... Not
skeletal.
They didn't know that you couldn't tell. You could tell that I don't know how they could tell if you are old or young. I don't know.
Was your head shaved?
Head was shaved. The head was falling out. The hair from the typhoid, because I had constantly. I think I was constantly. Really, I don't know.
And by this time, you'd
and
been
by then
skeletal.
I had the rips out and brown, crimpled skin, like they have now in these children.
What did the French prisoners of war think about the way you looked? Were they shocked?
Well, they know they were not, because they saw many camps by now. They told me that Hungarian doctor was a Jew as well, and he somehow came to that camp because they didn't have enough doctors. And now they went through a lot of camps. They were evacuating, and Bergen-Belsen was the last place, I think, or not the last place. I don't know. So we got to Bergen-Belsen somehow, and by then that I got to Bergen-Belsen started to be disarray, you see.
Would be in 1945 now?
Yes.
Where?
End of the story, really, when it was before the liberation. And I know that there was a Weberei. Weberei, it means that you do with knitting things or whatever materials. And beside that was a family camp where families could exist on very little, but could exist with children together because they were paid up. I don't know. They told me. I don't know whether it's true.
They paid money.
Paid money from Switzerland, somebody to get them out. And
what exactly can you tell me about your arrival at Bergen-Belsen?
I was very ill.
You were still in the Red Cross van.
Yes, I was, and because I was with French soldiers, they put me in this Weberei building, which the Weberei meant that is not the camp where they kill each other. They were working people, but I couldn't work. But in that time, it started to be that I saw the heaps of bodies, the corpses in heaps, and I couldn't walk properly because, you know, I had terrific pains, and I was hopping around, and all what I wanted to look for the kitchen.
Where were the heaps of bodies? Outside?
Everywhere, outside the block barracks, everywhere.
Was any attempt?
And some people who still were corpses, but they used to carry in the deep ditches. They couldn't burn enough or didn't have any more fuel or what. So they carried them, and there were heaps on carriages, and they carried people like a chain, carried the dead bodies who were maybe not dead, you know, and just put them in that, what is in my book, in that graves, and they themselves fall into it, and they were still alive. And that's true.
And they'd be buried.
And then, you know, when people saw this, don't you think that they were not moved? They were not dummies. They were all in tears in their eyes, and they said, Shema Israel, hear me, God, Adonai. And they were humans. They were not dehumanized. But those who dictated it, they were dehumanized. So we thought we were really the humans, and they are just, I can't even call animal, because it must have been something extraordinary machinery.
So you're saying that the Jews weren't dehumanized, that they still felt.
No. You see, when in the camp, when we were five in one bank, when it was not the long bank, when it was separate banks, right? They put five sticks and one body died. So we were discussing, we didn't know who we are, we didn't recognize each other, right? And what you are. But we discussed it, if this body, we can't move the body because the Germans don't let us move it. We have to sleep with them, right?
With the dead
so
bodies.
If somebody had a blanket or a rag, some of the dead who died, if we should take it off her and use it as survivor, or we should leave it from respect. So that much human we were. So when they told that they found us dehumanized in heaps and begging for bread, that is really not true, because they were begging for sanitary situations and things like that, but not begging. They just saw that we are maybe they saw they are liberated. They wanted to be taken notice, because I myself was on a heap that they wanted to bury and push shovel away, and because I spoke out.
How long were you in Belsen? How long was it before?
I don't think I was very long there. I don't think very long. I can't tell you the time, but I must have been by the end, a couple of weeks maybe or so. I don't really know.
And did you stay in this work barrack?
Oh, no. After they started to go with this white thing, it started to be disorganized. They were not anymore... It happened to me on the beginning, though, that this potato, that I found that potato, I started to say I went to the kitchens, right? Because that was my priority always, Alex told me. And I really found the kitchen. And I don't know, I can't tell you, it is a very complicated story. I got hold of a small potato and on the dead bodies, and where they burned them on heaps and clothes, things. I put it, the potato on, because I couldn't eat it raw. To have it a bit baked. It didn't matter. It was not because I was dehumanized. There was no other choice, you see.
The fire was burning.
So I put the potato in. And the beautiful woman, I always think of Irma Grace. I don't know if she was in Bergen, but she looked like Irma Grace. And with a beautiful, strong shoe with nails and beautiful face. All they were beautiful, you know. And she told me, It's a nice potato. Warm your hand over it. And I put my hand over, and I looked at her. She smiled like she wants good, and she started to push my hand down until they squashed that potato in the fire. So even though I have signs on my hand from it, it was broken, one of the bones. And that was the last experience which was that terrifying from bodily harm. Then in the bank, as I said, when the doctors did this program, which it amazed me and also affected me very badly, I was crying and wrote a letter to the producer, that they were very good-hearted people, these doctors. But
the doctors who went to Belsen from England.
Yes, I know. But then they said that the Hungarian, they were in charge, and the Hungarian soldiers to on the end to help to put them. So in very good hands we were, then God saved me from that. I didn't know that, because they were fascists, all right? So can you imagine how good they done? They left us in the hands of the fascists, right? So when I woke in the hospital, they took me from the heaps because I opened my mouth.
And how did you end up on the heap before?
Because I didn't have really any more energy, I think. After when I hopped around with this very painful leg and everything, and I just
had you collapsed
down,
at some point?
Collapsed, sat down, and I was still working my mind and my half sleeping, half up, And I just started to speak. And
Had you returned to your barracks after you'd had your hand?
No, it was all messy then. It was all absolutely. The water wasn't open. The people started to attack the warehouses, the grown-ups, and who had some energy. They saw, not from robbing, they robbed us out everywhere, every time before. So these clothes which were there, they were just our own clothes, right? But they, and for food, the warehouses, they broke it up and they wanted to go in and they wanted to get new clothes, but not because of robbing for having the thing, because of hygiene. And that's what they can't understand. Even then, the hygiene was more important than anything. But the water wasn't there, and then they started to change their clothes. But you see, what they couldn't understand, that it was typhoon, it was lice. They lice everything together, this beautiful Persian and ermines, and what they robbed from everyone, it was there. It was worth a fortune for the Germans, which was their shot. And they just went in on these heaps. And I tried to do the same, but I couldn't. And I went back, and I just collapsed. And I was speaking out when I saw soldiers around me, because I was aware of something happening, not German. And they took me to this hospital, because I woke there, and there again I was hysterical. I started to scream when I came to me, and I don't want any... They explained me, I don't want to be experimented on, because I heard German voices, you see? The good nurses and all, they came to help, yeah?
Did you know about these experiments on the Jews?
We knew on them everything, yes. And I went to look for friends when I could hop and everything. It was all mess then. And I didn't understand that much what other people, but some people, they went still with this white the Germans stood on, some they ran away.
What do you mean this white? A white
armband? White, it means that they give up themselves before the camp was given over for the British, yeah? And then when they came in, then I was opening my eyes and talked, and luckily God helped me. I always believed it. And they took me off because they saw I am alive, and they took me to this hospital.
Who had put you on the heap?
Somebody, when I was collapsed somewhere.
Someone had found you collapsed around
the heap. Yeah, they just put the people on the heap. There are many alive, believe you me. Believe you me. And anyway, these people who tried to change their clothes, first of all, the British took back everything. They said that is no way that they can keep it, even if that was a mink or what, because it's lazy. But in the beginning, I didn't understand it. I thought they are bad, you know, and other people, because they didn't understand it, that they must be all cleaned up. So they had this hospital, and then I worked in that hospital on the procedure of delicing again and all, but in better condition. I started to scream because I heard German voices. Then they tried to quiet me down and say, what language I speak? I said, I speak German, I speak English a bit, I speak this, I speak that. They started to explain to me that they are not the baddest, you know, and all this. And I said, well, I don't want Germans still to touch me. I don't, if it is true, I don't want any, ich will nicht, ich will nicht. And then a nun came. And my father taught me, a nun or a priest, I should respect always. And I agreed with the nun. Because, you see, the education from the past, despite I didn't have plenty of schools, it came back. So, and that was the end of it then. Then I was in the hospital. They didn't want to give me a mirror. I had all sorts of illnesses and typhoid and went through that. And then one day, well, of course, I wanted to eat onion, and I wanted a mirror, because I saw on the other bed, it's very clean, very nice, but I saw how they looked, yes?
Why did you want to eat onion?
Well, I always wanted to eat onion, and all the time that I was in the camp, I was craving for onion. And when I went to a farm where peasants were, I tried always to ask for onion someone when I could. And I didn't have anything to give for it, and I didn't have anybody goody I didn't meet in a farm that they would give it to me, or fine. But I was craving for this onion like mad. So they asked me what I would like, because they gave... You see, in the camp, in the meantime, in Bergen-Belsen, many people died after the graveyards. They were put in the graveyard from eating, because they wanted to be good people, the allies, and they gave them the tins of food. And if they gobbled it quick up, or they ate it quick because they were hungry, they just blown up the stomach and died. So I was saved from that by the mighty, because they took me to the hospital and I was fed hydrogen. When I wanted angel, they said, I can't have now because my stomach can't take it. But I will have a little. They gave me just a tiny little. That was I wanted always onion. And since that day, I love onion. I can't afford in my social standard to eat it because it stinks, right? And also, I have a habit to have 2 loaves of bread at home, never to run out of bread.
Even today?
Even today, yes, even today. Well, if somebody comes to my house, it's not for worrying for me, concern for others, and is hungry. Some children go, like my son in America, around, and they are from good parents, and they have no enough money, and they come in my house, and the first thing will be that I feed them. And a professor from Poland, from a Catholic lecturer, came just over with 30 students, and he had food from they were placed in a, don't know, hostel, and Solidarity probably helped them, I don't know who, but they were at and got 10 pounds a day. But the boys were looking, the fruit only, they couldn't afford to buy it. So that professor came, I invited him, he's very educated, invited him to the Mikado, and I gave him a few good meals. And, I was so happy to do that, because there's no starvation, no, but he was really in the world where is everything here, and he could not afford, despite he came out from Poland, to buy fruit or things like that.
You said that they wouldn't give you a mirror when you were in the
hospital.
Yeah,
they wouldn't give me a mirror, no, they said I have to wait a bit. And so I started to be a girl, I started to be wanting to know. I must have been by that time 12 and a half or so,
What did you look like that prevented them giving you a mirror?
Because I looked like the next door. I looked at like when you see, these starving children in Ethiopia and in Bergen-Belsen on the film when it was the liberation. Therefore, I tell you, if someone looked well after the liberation, that must have been helping to the Germans, because it can't be otherwise.
What happened? Did you see anything that happened to the Capos? They
asked me, they found that woman who did push my hand with the potato. I thought it was Irma Grace, and I don't know. But they told me, Major Chatter, who wanted later to adopt me, who came to the hospital and picked me up because I was really, he liked me. And when I went to town, to Hanover, I was put in Bardo Wickerstrasse in a villa next to Baroness, if it is true. That's what she said her name is, and she was Hungarian, and her name was Ila. And I researched it in Germany, it must have been, it's true that it existed, a Baroness, and she was being as a housekeeper because her husband apparently was a war criminal. I don't know if it is true, but he told his name, her name is like that, and I can remember her blue eyes, her blonde hair. She must have been then. To me, she looked old, but she must have been in her 40s. And I don't know whether it was belonging to this Baron Thyssen or not. I don't know. I never will know because, this is not a film that I can tell you. But it is true that when...
The woman who crushed your hand in the camp.
Yeah, in the camp.
They found her.
Well, they found a few, and they wanted me to come to the jail and identify when I was better. And I didn't want to go. I said, no, I would not do to anyone anything. She could do to me. She could do to other people. I don't want... Once in my life, a Jewish couple did bad, and I told her off because I felt that she would be ashamed because her father was a rabbi. I heard it from someone. But I think if these people done to me, they were not people that I should go and give it back a revenge. Because with a revenge, I know in the Bible it's written, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But it's not so, really. It's not so. Feel anything.
Was she a German?
Yes. Well, they were all equal to me, these Germans. They looked all equal. But nowadays, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't go. And not because I was afraid. I did not want to do harm to anyone. I said, if God will punish her, it's God's will.
Who exactly is Major Chutter? Can you explain?
Major Chutter was the town mayor of Hanover. He's the one who's in the book.
And he came to visit the hospital.
Yes, and he found me there, and then he made arrangements to come to Hanover because he had it in mind, you know, to adopt me. I didn't know then, you know, but later. And then his wife joined him in 45, and he was put in another place, but he always cared for me and came because I was still 47 in Germany. Because until they found my parents, because he took me off from the list, from the registrar, that I was in private house with a few private girls and I was not registered properly, you know. And he regretted it always. I had a lot of problems from this, you know, because he put me down as I work in the Hanomag factory that I should get the ration. But I couldn't work because I was ignorant, analphabet, you know. And they put to me somebody like Jeffrey to entertain me, to teach me a bit English, a bit.
Who is Jeffrey?
Jeffrey Lessen, who is in the book. Yeah, who is in the book.